Well, I have to say, I wasn't really looking forward to covering this topic in Proverbs. Wasn't super thrilled about having to have you listen through that reading. But over the course of the week, there's no other place I'd rather be standing, and honestly, nothing else I'd rather be talking about than that chapter of Proverbs right now. So the Lord has done an amazing work for me this week, and I hope He will for you tonight as well. Now, if you're new or just sort of catching up with us, we're not going through the book of Proverbs chapter by chapter and verse by verse. So we do that for a lot of other books. So we'd cover the whole thing and cover every word, or at least every verse and every idea. But I'm frankly just not willing to do that with the book of Proverbs, and I don't really think it's well set up for that kind of teaching either. So what we have been trying to do is pick some of the major themes. All right, so we've talked about emotions, we've talked about work, we've talked about planning with God, or living kind of in cooperation with God's plans and our plans. I talked about the first two chapters of Proverbs, which set up the whole book, and in a few weeks I'll talk about the last two chapters of Proverbs. Now, there are two entire chapters in the book, 31 chapters. There are two entire chapters that portray a woman seducing a young man to go wayward in his life. All right, so I just can't skip that one. We've got to do it because it's there. But this chapter and the other one that we won't talk about, but it's similar to this one, Proverbs chapter 5, isn't just about that. The people in this chapter and the things that happen and might happen and could happen represent something that all people face, actually, in all different types of ways. So there's something here for everyone. It's one of those passages that is what it's about. It is what it says it is, but it's also about something more as well. And if I'm going to be a good pastor and a good preacher, I can't just skip the things that are uncomfortable, we maybe don't want to listen to or don't want to talk about. Because the world is very familiar with these things. As soon as we walk outside of this church, and this is frankly just a building, but if the church isn't going to talk about these things, then we're really not doing ourselves a service, really. Let me start out with the worst part, all right? And who really wants to dwell on this information? Roughly 20% of married people say they've had sex with someone other than their spouse. It varies from different ages. It gets up to 25% of married men. It gets up to 15% of women. Or how about this one? 1 in 5 mobile phone searches are for pornography. 1/3 of all internet downloads are related to porn. And it's not just men, because 1 in 3 users of those things are women. It's these things that do and are derailing people's lives, derailing lots of people's lives in life. And it is just a real thing that we've got to deal with. Thankfully, in addition to these unpleasant truths, we have some amazing. Pleasant is not even really the right word, not even a good enough word to talk about the assurance that we get a glimpse of in Proverbs, and the wonderful assurance and resources that Paul sets out in 1 Corinthians. And that's actually why I'm really excited to be standing here now talking about these things. Now, the chapter 5 in Proverbs, it's a single episode. It's a moral lesson. It's like a parable or like a fable. All right, it's designed to teach us several things, actually, and it picks up on one of Proverbs' most important images, the way. I don't know if you noticed this. You noticed the young boy and you noticed the woman, that's for sure. But you might not have noticed the way or the paths. Ways and paths are mentioned over 100 times in the book of Proverbs, 100 times. Pathways, ways, the way. Wisdom delivers you from the way of evil. Those who follow the forbidden one will not regain the paths of life. If we acknowledge God in all our ways, He will make our paths straight. Now, these paths link up with some other imagery in the book. And they're often related to women, two women, actually. The first is a personification of wisdom, Lady Wisdom, she's called. And in the opening chapter of the book, she's calling out to people in the public square, saying, "Listen to me, turn from your ways and get on my path. My path is the path of life. And with it come blessing and honor and abundance and all kinds of good." But there's also the forbidden woman, or the strange woman. she kind of maps onto someone called Lady Folly. All right, so we've got basically the wise, positive woman, and we've got the woman who's not portrayed well. Her speech is sweet, it's smooth. She encounters men at night in quieter areas of town. Proverbs 5 introduces us to her and says, above all, she's dangerous. Let's get into the scene here in chapter 5. You got the whole text, should have the whole text in an insert in your order of service. I'm at verse 3. The lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she's bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not consider the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. Do you notice the path? Do you see her path? Hers leads to death. She doesn't even think about the path of life. She doesn't even know it, actually. She's ignorant of the good way. And so the boy in this passage who follows her can go nowhere but wayward. A wayward life. That's the risk. That's the danger. Now, this episode isn't just about tempting women and wayward boys. As I've said, it is about that. But these characters stand for other things as well. That word there for the strange or forbidden woman refers to foreign things elsewhere in the Bible. Things not associated with God's people, at that time the people of Israel, including foreign things or gods that the people might be tempted to worship, something that would lead them astray on their walk with God. So this woman and this scene represent temptation wholesale. Temptations that lead anyone from faithfulness to God, anyone from breaking loyalty to the covenant of God. They're temptations for straying from the Christian way of life, derailing one's new life in Christ. All these things are at stake. That's what the chapter is about. And it's all these possibilities of unfaithfulness that just so happen to be packaged into a scene that's as familiar as it is ancient, a man who wanders off with the wrong woman. I'd like us to stick with the path imagery, the way of life and the way of death, and what it means to get on the path of life and stay on it. There are four signs in this passage. This is how I'd like you to think about it. Think about a pathway, a dirt trail, really. Four signs, road signs along the way. We've got two with a big red X, and we've got two nice green signs with arrows pushing forward. Two dangers, things that the boy in this passage and we ourselves fail to do and thus veer off the path of life, but also two opportunities, two green signs with those arrows pointing forward saying, this is how you get on the path and this is how you stay on it. Let's take these first two danger signs first. The first red X is consequences. When we fail to consider the consequences, we stray from the path of life. Start again in verse 7. And now, O sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way from her, and don't go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless, lest strangers take their fill of your strength, and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And at the end of your life you groan, and when your flesh and body are consumed, and you say, how I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. Can you see the consequences here? The dangers of getting together with a foreign woman? I counted at least two categories. First is huge loss. Lest you give your honor to others, your years to the merciless. Strangers take your strength and your labors go to another household. The life of this young man is given over to others. It's all taken from him, actually. It's not in a spirit of humble submission that he's giving over or serving people. Right? This is public shame. It's futility in his work. It's loss of what should be his and for his household. His life is lost because he wandered into the house of the wrong woman. I know people get married and divorced for many different reasons and in many different circumstances, and I'm not speaking about those things in general. What I'm thinking of here in this scene is men in particular that appear in the news that have had three and even four and are often in the news because they're on their fifth marriage. They're in the news marrying someone half their age and they split up again in 2 years. Now, these guys tend to pay monthly bills for up to four women and possibly four whole families. The fruit of their labor actually go elsewhere, into another home. I think by and large, they've lost people's respect who read those articles. And that's the first consequence. It's loss. It's loss. The second is regret. At the end of your life, you groan. And you say, how I hated discipline and I despised reproof. I wish I had listened. I'm old now and I'm not happy. I should have lived differently. I don't even need to tell you, don't be this person, because none of us want to be that person. The terrifying prospect, regret at the end of your life. Frankly, regret at any point in life. One of you just told me earlier on a different subject, I don't have any regrets. I don't think about life in terms of regrets. I think there's actually some kind of good in that. We need to learn from mistakes, of course. But there's something freeing about having acted honestly and well, of course, and not having any true regrets. Regrets can hang over. They can just deteriorate us, really. The biblical thing to say here is that that regret and those dangerous consequences should scare us. They should scare us onto the path of life. One big red X sign that says consequences. Consider the consequences or else, loss and regret. The other danger sign, and we will get to the green signs, is about heeding the right teachers, listening to the right voices. Let's pick up again from verse 12. Here's the exclamation. I hated discipline. My heart despised reproof. I didn't listen to the voice of my teachers. I didn't incline my ear to my instructors. I'm on the brink of ruin in the assembled congregation. Part of the regret is failing to listen to the right teachers. This guy is looking back on life thinking, I stuffed up and I'm not happy about it. Maybe as a boy, he didn't like correction. When someone said, hey, you're in the wrong, he wouldn't budge. It was always my way. He refused to listen to the voice of his teachers. Now, this is why and one of the reasons that in the New Testament, Jesus is always stressing to his disciples and to the crowd that they should listen to him. Listen to his voice. It's the importance of that, following him and heeding his teaching. The Apostle Paul writes to young pastors saying, mind your teaching. And if anybody's thinking about being a teacher, the book of James says, be careful. Not many of you should be hasty to do that. It's a special responsibility and there is special judgment reserved for people who take up that role. Good teaching is fundamental to a healthy church and it's fundamental to being on and staying on the healthy path, the good path, the path of life. To heed godly, gospel-filled teaching will keep us on the right path. And that's why I'm thrilled every time one of you walks up to me and says, well, I've been listening to this pastor. I've been reading through this website. I've got this podcast on the go over and over again. And you're so eager to tell me. That stuff's protective. It's life-giving. All right, that's the bad stuff. Contemporary discouraging statistics, our propensity to veer off the good path, and warning signs that show us the danger of getting off course. But your life path is not only marked by red X's. There are green signs, too, that say stick with it, say don't despair. There's good news, and there's help along the path. This is the path of life. I'll let Proverbs do the talking first, and then we'll talk about Proverbs. Let's go from verse 15. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman? and embrace the bosom of an adulteress. Remember, this is a father giving advice to his son, so he's addressing him directly. And what's Proverbs all about? If that's your question, it's completely understandable. Drinking water from your own cistern. Don't let your spring scatter abroad. Let your wife's breasts fill you with delight. This is the Bible. This is Proverbs chapter 5. And this is all about protection against sexual temptation. It is about more than that, as we've seen and will continue to see. But we need to talk about this passage first. I think in a really real way, in a very practical way. This text is offering an alternative for this young man who's decided to go off with a woman he shouldn't be with. And it's drawing out a lesson for us. Actually, it's drawing out a few lessons. Let me make a few points. The first and most important thing is a question, actually. Are you approaching this as a Christian or not? There's no judgment in that question. It just makes a big difference for how we're going to look at and talk about temptation and the alternatives to it, and frankly, the way out. Because Christians have new supernatural resources for facing temptation. To follow Christ means you're on a new path. It's a path of life. It's a path that Jesus calls the narrow path. It's not easy. But it's a path where the Holy Spirit's given you the power to say no to temptation and yes to purity, whatever purity looks like in your situation. It is a battle, and you will think, I'm never going to win. You might be thinking right now, I'm never going to win, never going to conquer this desire. But we've got to think, who's stronger in the end, the Spirit of God or your desires? Second, when it comes to temptation, I do think we should take strategies seriously. If nothing good happens on your computer after 10 p.m., then don't get on that computer. If you're tied up in knots with regret and shame and defeat, then speak with someone about it. Not everyone, but be open with the right people. If you can't go to the gym without looking at the wrong stuff and thinking the wrong thoughts, then stare at the floor or get out of the gym. Number three, men and women are not objects. Our bodies belong to us, our bodies belong to God, and if applicable, to a spouse. The Bible calls people in church brothers and sisters, and that's just a great way to think about people in general. Siblings. That's the standard for sexual purity. Number four, 1-4, married people or people perhaps in a relationship or considering that. The best antidote to sexual temptation. Again, affirming strategies, affirming accountability and people, affirming some big biblical truths and resources that the Christian has at hand. The best antidote to sexual temptation for a married person or a person with a partner, man or woman, is satisfaction in the spouse that God has given you. If you go to the grocery store hungry, you're probably going to buy too much food and the wrong kind of food. To be satisfied in your partner means you don't need other sources of satisfaction, emotional connections, physical connections, photographic stimulation, to put it politely. Now, these points apply to everything, by the way, everything. All temptations to sin, to do wrong against God, to disobey Jesus Christ. Christians have a new spiritual power to say no to whatever it is and to desire good things. We should fight the battle with practical strategies and with help from others. We should see people as people, not for our consumption, not for our pleasure. And not just to be avoided, but to befriend. And I think we should all strive to be so filled up with God's life that the wayward path just isn't that appealing. It just isn't that appealing. Let's move on to the final bit of our passage. No matter what path you're on, path of life, path of death, veering off course, getting back on track, God is present. God is present. Verse 21. For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he's held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he's led astray. Proverbs keeps this point short. Everyone's way, everyone's life path is seen by the Lord. God observes it all. Now, this is a comfort and it's a warning. There's a lot of good in thinking God's watching me and I better behave. There's so much value also in knowing that God's with us in the struggle and in our temptation. You know, when it was first started, Christianity was called the Way. The Way in Acts, they refer to it. Paul going after people who are on the Way. It sounds like it is something from Star Wars, Mandalorian fans. This is the Way. Jesus even calls himself the Way and talks about a narrow gate and a wide gate that lead to different paths. The wide gate, one is difficult. The wide gate's easy. The narrow gate is difficult. And the difficult way is to follow Jesus. And it's tough because we do have to say no to ourselves, because we live in a new world of all new possibilities, of all new wonderful kinds of powers, but also in a bunch of new standards and expectations. And it can be difficult. But it is the good way. It's the path of life. And it doesn't lead to death. Anyone who embarks on that path can rest assured that God himself is with. Loads of people are lonely these days. Married people, single people, urban people, rural people. But being alone and in danger is something completely different. Under threat, temptation, pressure, we crumble on our own. And the Bible's very aware of this. I think that's probably one of the reasons that Psalm 23, a verse from Psalm 23, is probably one of the most famous passages in the Bible. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. In that deep, dark danger of threat and despair, temptation or trial, God is with us. In our 1 Corinthians passage, the Apostle Paul says this to the Christians. He says, "No temptation has overtaken you that's not common to man. God is faithful, and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide a way of escape that you may be able to endure it." Do Christians get tempted by sin? Yes. Does God allow us to be tempted? Yes. Are those temptations extraordinary in nature? No. No temptation is overtaking you that is not common to humans. And most importantly, does God leave us alone to fend for ourselves in that struggle? Absolutely not. God is faithful. That's what Paul says. God's faithful. He's not going to let you be tempted to that degree. Well, my last question is, who is God faithful to? What is Paul really saying? God's faithful and he won't let you be tempted. Well, God is faithful to you. That's what he's saying. God is going to be faithful to you because he's made a promise here that says he's with you in temptation. The temptation is not extraordinary, and he's going to give you a way out. To anyone who knows the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, this is anyone who's heard the good news of the gospel of Jesus, that God is holy, that we are sinful, that Jesus restores us in right relationship, even though we deserve no good thing. For anyone who's heard that and said, "Yes, please, I'm in. I want that, whatever the cost. Sign me up for the path of life." If that's you, then God has made a commitment to you. He's committed to being by your side in whatever temptation you face. He's committed to forgiving you when you fail and confess. And he's committed to giving you the power to stand firm on the path of life. Thanks be to him.